House Committee substitute for Senate Bill 370 Judiciary by the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to aid to families with dependent children and to child support and enforcement and providing for an effective date.
The bill is before us in third reading and under debate. Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that isn't up there yet. Bill 370 be returned to second reading for purposes of a specific amendment. The amendment is placed on your desk.
Your objection? Objection. Representative Clarkson, some latitude on the amendment.
Mr. Speaker, the amendment removes the offending section that related to the calculation of child support to include the portion that went to the mother. With this amendment, I can support the legislation.
Representative Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I particularly like that amendment. As I mentioned before, I think the new director in this program is doing a superb job in making irresponsible fathers and ex-husbands do what they should have done in the first place and be responsible for their children and their spouses, ex-spouses. And I'm particularly impressed with the presentation that the gentleman from Spinard gave yesterday, that when that mother is with her child, that she should be compensated, and that it seemed to me no extra problem for the department to make sure that she is receiving her just dues for herself as well as her child. And I just think it's bad policy to separate the issues in this fashion. We have the department, they're set up, they can just as easily make sure that the mother gets her reimbursement, financial support each month, as well as the child. And I'd like to know if the gentleman from Spinard is receiving from his very convincing speech yesterday why this should be in there.
The question before us is whether or not to move from third to second reading. Are there objections to moving to second reading? Objections to second reading? The bill is before us in second reading. Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I move amendment number one and ask unanimous consent.
Are there any objections to amendment number one? Any objections to the amendment? I hear objections. Are you ready for the question, Representative Clarkson? Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, amendment number one would delete section 6 of the bill, which appears on page 3. This is the section that would have expanded the obligation to pay support to not only the child but to the mother. And as I noted, that is a payment that would not increase the payment to the child but would in fact be received by the state, giving the child no benefit whatsoever. I encourage the deletion of the amendment of the section.
Are there objections to amendment number one? Are there objections to the amendment? Amendment number one has been adopted. The bill is back before us in third reading.
Question.
Ready for the question. The question is, shall House Committee substitute for Senate Bill 370, Judiciary, amended House, pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk, lock the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? The clerk, please tally the board.
38 yeas, no nays.
House Committee substitute for Senate Bill 370, Judiciary, amended House, has passed the House to reconsideration. Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call vote on final passage of Judiciary Committee substitute for Senate Bill 370 as amended by the House be considered the roll call on the effective date clause.
Are there any objection as to the adoption of the effective date clause? Hearing no objection, that clause has been adopted. We're still under unfinished business. Representative Szymanski.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to bring up reconsideration of CSSB 254 at this time.
Would the clerk please read the title of that bill?
Committee substitute for Senate Bill 254, Labor and Commerce, by the Labor and Commerce Committee, an act relating to workers' compensation.
Bill is before us in third reading and under debate. Representative Szymanski.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd move and ask unanimous consent that we move back to second reading for a specific amendment.
Are there objections? Are there objections? Hearing none, the bill is before us in second reading.
Thank
Representative
you, Mr. Speaker. I'd move and ask unanimous consent that amendment number one be adopted.
Are there any objections to amendment number one? Any objections to the amendment? Amendment number one has been adopted. The bill is back before us in third reading. Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall committee substitute for Senate Bill 254, Labor and Commerce, amended House, pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk locked the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote?
Hey, wait a minute.
Representative Gruenberg. Did the clerk open the roll? Representative Gruenberg.
Did they return?
Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Will the clerk please tally the board?
Yeas, no nays.
Committee substitute for Senate Bill 254, Labor and Commerce, amended House, has passed the House in reconsideration. Still under unfinished business. Representative Clarkson, down to an unfinished business. Representative Furness?
Not unfinished business, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to go up to calendar for introduction of guests, if we could, please.
Are there any objections? Hearing no objections.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We're pleased today to introduce two special guests from Anchorage. Let me make sure they're still in the gallery before I do this. one person, Mr. Speaker, I believe is a regional sales director for Northwest Airlines. She's also, I believe, the sister-in-law of the, I don't know if it's junior or senior representative from Eagle River. She is a resident of the district, represented by Representative Pettyjohn and Rieger. Mr. Speaker, Mrs. Penny Brock in Gallery A. Mr. Speaker, my next guest today is a gentleman who is also an employee and supervisor with Northwest Airlines. He resides in the District 13, Representative Martin and Pichot, Mr. Tommy Bishop. One last comment, Mr. Speaker, and then I'll be through. Mr. Speaker, in addition to coming down for the first time, I believe, to Juneau and observing firsthand the legislative process, Mr. Bishop and Mrs. Brock has been very instrumental in providing an outstanding level of community service within the Anchorage community. We passed a citation just several days ago on their behalf. I've also hedged my bet, Mr. Speaker, just in case my citation gets in trouble in the Senate. I have also prepared plaques that I will be giving to them today. With votes coming up on certain bills today, we never know. So I will be giving them the plaques. Thank you.
Any further guests for introduction? To announcements, Representative Clarkson?
Mr. Speaker, two announcements. First, it's my intent to recess the House until 4:30 this afternoon so we can take care of a couple of committee meetings. Secondly, because I don't want to wait until her roses wilt this afternoon, I want to take this opportunity to wish Representative Betty Cato a very happy birthday.
Representative Cato, would you care to try to say something nice to us?
Yes, I really would. I had hoped that our deadline would be followed and that today would be the last day of the session. Unfortunately, I did not get the birthday present I wanted, but I love everybody.
Under announcements of standing committees and special committees, Representative Sund.
Mr. Speaker, some of us who have come from a certain profession signed a card for the birthday lady of today, committing that we would not talk on the floor. She has it signed there, but I say procedurally, I have to say something about scheduling meetings, so I have to break my commitment. The loans meeting today will be at 3:30. I think we'll have to meet in the court building unless finance is available. We usually meet up there on Senate Bill 476. We carried over from yesterday, and I would announce a meeting for tomorrow on Senate Bill 13 and Senate Bill 453 at a Loans Committee meeting, probably tomorrow afternoon.
Representative Kopanen.
Thank you. Two announcements. Hess has not had the Senate bills referred to as expected, and therefore will not meet today unless later announcement. Also, the Conference Committee on Senate Bill 240 will meet in the Butrovich Room at 3 p.m. Thank you.
Before we go any further with announcements, I know the Rules Chairman was going to make this announcement, perhaps Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I do have two announcements. The first one, class pitchers will be at 4:30 today when we come back in on the floor. And the second announcement is under committee. The Rules Committee will meet tomorrow at 8:30 in room 208. It's a Senate Concurrent Resolution number 42 relating to the Legislative Committee to study the state's tax policy.
I would like the members of the House to please be prompt at 4:30. He's coming in at 4 to set up. He puts his camera here, and I can't sit down, and I'd like to get my limbo files and things so we can get it done with and out of the way. Representative Miller.
Before I make my announcement, could I inquire the chair, what is the plans for tomorrow and, if you know, for Sunday? Because that'll have a bearing on the announcement.
Well, I want you to have a very good day today, so I won't tell you. No, tomorrow you can plan from 10 o'clock on through probably late. The other body is a little bit behind in their schedule. They have been in caucuses most of the AM and continued. We have to start receiving bills, and you can plan on a full day tomorrow, and you can plan on Sunday starting at 1 o'clock and rolling through. Whatever happens, happens. Representative Miller.
Speaker, I will announce then that today we'll have at 1:30 the bill that's on the list, Senate Bill 470, Common Interest Act Ownership. We do have an expert in this area going to be on teleconference from Connecticut, which will be 5:30 his time. So I'd ask members to be prompt at 1:30. All the bills this morning that we did not deal with, which happened to be all the bills that were on the calendar, have been carried over. And I greatly fear that we'll probably have to meet tonight after this afternoon after our final adjournment. So that's just the way it has to be, I'm afraid.
Representative Hurley.
Mr. Speaker, State Affairs will meet at 3 p.m. Please be prompt so we can get as much done as possible today on campaign financing.
Representative Navarre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Labor and Commerce will meet at 1:30 today for what will hopefully be a short meeting.
Representative Gruenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Because of the floor session and because we haven't received the bill on the calendar, Hess will not meet today.
Representative Larson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Finance Subcommittee on Senate Bill 408, let's finish up our work. Let's meet at 1:15.
When we come back in at 4:30 after the photographs, we will start continuing with Senate Bill 367, and we'd be entertaining amendment number 6. Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent the House stand in recess till promptly at 4:30.
4:30. Will the House come back to order? Before the at ease, we had just completed our work on amendment number 5. Before we go to amendment number 6, Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent. We go up the daily order of business to reports of from messages from the Senate.
Are there any objections? Hearing no objections, would the clerk please read messages from the Senate?
Mr. Speaker, the Senate has passed committee substitute for House Bill number 500, Finance, with the following amendment. Senate committee substitute for committee substitute for House Bill 500, Finance, making appropriations for the operating and loan program expenses of state government effective date, and it is returned for consideration.
Yeah. Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that we go down the calendar at unfinished business.
Are there any objections? Hearing no objections, we're in unfinished business. Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, without objection, I'd like to take up the budget in the limbo file.
The clerk please read the title of that bill?
Senate Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for House Bill number 500, Finance, by the Finance Committee. An act making appropriations for the operating and loan program expenses of state government and providing for an effective date.
Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I move that the House concur in the Senate amendments to Committee Substitute for House Bill 500, Finance, thereby adopting Senate Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for House Bill number 500, Finance, and ask the members to vote no.
Representative Maru.
Mr. Speaker, without getting too much involved in the detail, I wonder if the Majority Leader could give us kind of a précis of exactly what the changes are.
Well, Representative Martin.
Mr. Speaker, I have to object temporarily because I thought I had an agreement with the Finance Committee chairman to put my little piece of pork in here, and I don't see anything. I was wondering if there's an oversight.
I noticed grease on your tie. Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall the House concur in the Senate amendments to a committee substitute for House Bill 500, Finance? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk will lock the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk tally the board?
No yeas, 40 nays.
The House has failed to concur with the Senate amendments to committee substitute for House Bill 500, Finance, the reaffirming the appointments of which the Senate was notified for the conference committee will be Representative Adams, Representative Duncan, and Representative Rieger. Representative Miller.
Speaker, while we're on unfinished business, if I may, with the concurrence of the chair, I'd like to waive Senate Bill 150. This is a bill, an act making miscellaneous amendments to the Alaska Water Use Act. It's been considered by the Judiciary Committee, and the agreement among all the members present was that we did not need to look at this, and because of the time schedule, we've agreed to waive it. I'd make that motion.
Next committee referral?
The floor, rules, Mr. Speaker.
Rules. Are there any objections to the motion to waive the bill? Hearing no objections, that bill is waived to next committee of referral. Moving back up to the daily calendar, we had a series of amendments before us, and we had just completed our work on amendment number 5. Would the clerk please make reference to amendment number 6?
Amendment number...
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Boucher.
Excuse me, sir.
Representative Boucher.
I'd like to move back up the calendar to messages from the governor and submit this memorandum that's on our desk, if I may.
Representative Boucher, that would be basically out of order and not part of our calendar. That memorandum was, I believe, sent to members of the House of a personal nature, not a message to the House itself.
All right, call of the House, please.
Well, we do have the bill pending before us, so I guess the House is called. The motion, of course, being the bill on the board. Would the clerk at this time please make reference to amendment number 6?
Amendment number 6 by Pinyalberry, and it starts on page 10 after line 20, and it has been placed on each member's desk.
Point of order.
Representative Martin.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Speaker, about three times this year so far we've had point of order that you did uphold.
Well, please state your point.
The point of order this time, sir, is that this seems to be quite similar to a bill that was withdrawn from Finance Committee the other day. And then also it's very similar to a Senate Bill 217. And if wondering if this is pulling a bill from committee, even though the House does not have it. It did have this bill, and therefore it's coming to us as an amendment for another bill.
Representative Martin, the bill which now this amendment embodies was withdrawn from the by the prime sponsor, and as to the Senate bill, we have no control over that. Representative Clarkson.
That's not a point of order. There's no rule relating to this issue.
The point is, sir, it's a Senate Bill 217. And what's House Bill 367? If we start a precedent where all members will request to withdraw their bills from whatever committee they have, we may see them in the next 3 days as amendments to what other bills they can attack them to. I think it's starting a bad precedent, sir.
Representative Martin, you are correct, but remember, in order to withdraw a bill which is in possession of the body, there must be basically a consensus of this body to do so. So as far as the bill that was introduced by Representative Pinyalberry, it has been officially withdrawn, and as to what the Senate has, we have no control over, and I guess we're talking about a procedural thing. As much as I'd like to rule in in your favor in this case, I would have to say that, no, the amendment is a legitimate amendment before us. Representative Navarre.
At ease.
Would the House please stand at ease? We are under a call. Would the House please come back to order? Representative Navarre.
Mr. Speaker, there's an amendment to the amendment.
Okay, we would have to move the amendment first in order to get the amendment to the amendment before us. The clerk did make reference to Amendment Number 6. Representative Pinalberry.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent for the adoption of Amendment Number 6.
Yes. Hearing objections. Representative has the floor.
Mr. Speaker, I would at this time like to go through the amendment unless the chair deems it best to entertain the amendment to the amendment first.
Okay, the amendment number 6 has been moved. I understand that there is an amendment to the amendment. Representative Navarre.
Mr. Speaker, I move the amendment to the amendment.
Okay, the amendment to the amendment is, I believe, in your packet, Amendment Number 9, which is now going to be the amendment to Amendment Number 6.
Does the clerk
Representative Navarre?
Does the clerk have to make reference to it?
Would the clerk please make reference to the amendment to the amendment?
Amendment to Amendment Number 6 by Navarre, and it starts, insert a new section to read, and it has been placed on each member's desk.
Representative Gruenberg?
Yes, Mr. Speaker. I request and ask unanimous consent that I be added as a co-sponsor to Amendment Number 9.
Amendment to the amendment.
The amendment to the amendment.
Are there any objections? Hearing none, Representative Gruenberg is a co-sponsor of that amendment to the amendment. Representative Navarre.
Mr. Speaker, I move the amendment to the amendment. Ask unanimous consent.
Hearing objections. Representative Navarre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. What the amendment to the amendment does is add in a severability clause so that if any portion of the amendment, if it's adopted, is found unconstitutional, the rest of it will still be held as valid. Regardless of how you feel on the amendment, this is a good provision, and I would ask the concurrence of the body.
Are there any, Representative, are there any objections to the amendment to Amendment Number 6? Representative Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I think we already have a severability clause in the original bill that's before us, and I was wondering if this would be redundant and unnecessary, because if we did that to any other amendment that comes to the bill, it just seems to me it's an unnecessary amendment to the amendment when we're already cleared in the bill itself with a severability clause.
Representative Navarre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The severability clause that is in the bill as it currently reads is a severability clause that relates to chapter or Title 36. This is Chapter 38. I checked with the AG's office today, and they felt that it was important that we have a specific legislative intent with regard to severability on an issue of this magnitude.
Representative Pinalberry.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I concur with remarks just made by the Chairman of the Commerce Committee and thank him for the amendment and urge members to adopt.
Representative Taylor.
Yes. As a point of procedure, I guess, Mr. Speaker, I'm somewhat confused. I have Amendment Number 6 here on my desk. And it says Amendment Number 6 to House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 367, Labor and Commerce. Is that right?
That's correct.
I see. Well, the representative next to me had a different amendment altogether labeled Number 6, and we were both comparing them, and we were a bit confused.
Okay. Representative Navarre's amendment to Amendment Number 6 in your packet was Representative Navarre Amendment Number 9. And is there further any objections? Representative Maru?
Mr. Speaker, I'm looking at Amendment Number 9, which is now the amendment to the Amendment Number 6. And it's our custom in this body to have page and line numbers, and this does not have any page nor line numbers. Therefore, is it in order?
Would the House please stand at ease? Will the House come back to order?
Before the at ease, we're discussing the amendment to the amendment number 6. Would the clerk please read the line items?
The line item? Oh, page 10, third line from the bottom, insert a new section to read.
Okay. Are there any objections to the correction of the amendment to the amendment? Hearing no objections, the whole thing is before us and it has been moved. Is there any further debate on the amendment to the amendment? Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall the amendment to the amendment number 6 be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk locked the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk please tally the board?
30 yeas, 10 nays.
The amendment to the amendment has been adopted. This brings us back to the amendment number 6. Representative Pinalberry.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. During the at-ease, the representative from Wrangell brought to my attention the reason for some confusion about there being two amendments, number 6, and I'd like to explain the difference to the body. One of them is actually amendment number 6, and it's got the number 6 handwritten next to the word amendment. The other has the word explanation under it, and is only a narrative of what the amendment number 6 does. And by your leave, Mr. Speaker, if I may at this time go through amendment number 6 section by section, because what I have found this afternoon talking to many members and many other people, there's some confusion, some misinformation about what Amendment 6 is, because people were looking at Senate Bill 271, which happens to be markedly different than this amendment, and is dissimilar. And this amendment, being a different creature, has different provisions in it. The first important feature of Amendment Number 6, Mr. Chairman, is the policy statement. And it says the state should develop its material natural resources to provide the constitutionally mandated maximum benefit to the people of the state. And these benefits are to include job opportunities as well as revenue. The next section is the findings, which indicate some of the conclusions that have been made from the database that's been developed in the past year, mostly due to the passage last year by this body of House Bill 294. The third section is unavailability of preferred workers, and it's the first substantive section, and it starts out by saying that, if I may paraphrase, if you're an employer that's affected by this bill, then you may come to the State of Alaska Department of Labor, and for free, we'll help you locate qualified Alaskan workers. And if we can't supply them, then you may bring in non-residents. The next section concerning regulations merely requires the Department of Labor to follow the Administrative Procedures Act. The next section concerning zone of underemployment. And this section provides that eligible resident employees be given a job preference on a natural resource project that is within the zone. And that the number of jobs, the handout I gave you says the number of employees, but it's more correctly phrased, the number of jobs subject to the preference is to be determined by the Commissioner of Labor. And that decision will be based on the economics and demographic data that are required to be collected so that he can make that decision. This section also establishes the criteria for an underemployment zone. Next is the second category of preference, and that second category of preference is the economically distressed zone. And this says that the same criteria and the same preference are established for this zone as for publicly funded projects, which is the main part of the bill before you, the Senate bill. The next section, labeled General Requirements, says that if an area is an economic disaster under a whole different statute, an economic disaster under 4433, then that statute supersedes anything in this statute. The next section is concerns the qualifications, transfers, and certifications that must take place as part of the workings of this bill. It provides that bona fide intercompany transfers of management employees from a company that has offices here, say, and offices in the lower 48, they may transfer their management people up here without prejudice, and it does not violate any part of the resident hire preference. This section also says, very importantly, I think, that the employers are, in fact, the sole judge of qualifications for any of the applicants for employment to come before them, whether that applicant comes from the state or where they find that applicant on their own. This section also says that the employer shall certify that employees are eligible for a preference at the time they are hired. And the same would go for a labor organization. The section also allows the Department of Labor to assist an employer in verifying the eligibility. If an employer wants to hire a carpenter or a mechanic but isn't sure that that person is qualified for the preference, he can go to the Department of Labor, and the Department of Labor will assist him in determining the eligibility. The next section, 384590, requires the Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources. First time and only time we refer to the Commissioner of Natural Resources in this amendment, to incorporate provisions that require compliance with this chapter and all of the resource lease agreements for oil, gas, and related minerals. The next section has to do with reporting requirements. It requires the reporting by employers that are subject to this act, such information as the Commission of Labor may deem necessary, and it also provides for the confidentiality of that information and the sharing of it between state agencies. The next section is the penalty section. It's the civil penalty section for willful, I stress willful, noncompliance. And it provides for a $5,000 fine for willful rejection of the first qualified eligible applicant, and $10,000 for each rejection thereafter. It also allows for a rejected applicant to get paid his lost wages if he's been wrongfully rejected. The next section concerns penalties for, I want to stress something, this penalty section we just went through is the only penalty that applies to non-compliance with the statute. And I'm going to explain how these other penalty sections apply. For the applicants and employers, if either the employee or the employer make false, sworn, or unsworn statements about their certification or about their preference eligibility, they are then subject to the existing state statute for perjury and falsification, two separate sections in the statutes. Now, that has nothing to do with compliance with the amendment or this bill. What it has to do with is simply falsification of documents. The next section is the civil penalty section for false certification, and it provides for a civil penalty for false certification by an employee up to $400 for each falsification and forfeiture of future entitlements to the preference. An employer would be subject to a $2,000 fine for each of the first five falsifications, and then from $2,000 to $4,000 for each falsification thereafter. The next section simply says that the applicability of this bill is to all natural resource projects on state lands. You have the definitions section following that. Mr. Speaker, I'd like to, with that run through, just try to answer a couple other questions that have been the most oft asked questions about this amendment. The first one is constitutionality, and I'm quite pleased that everyone is concerned about the constitutionality of this amendment and this bill, because that's the crux of the issue that's been plaguing the people of the state since the Supreme Court struck down our last resident hire preference law. This morning I passed out to you a letter from the Assistant Attorney General, Ron Lawrenson. In that letter, Mr. Lawrenson said unequivocally that he would be quite comfortable in defending this particular amendment and this statute if we enact it. Furthermore, the severability clause that we just adopted as an amendment to the amendment, and incidentally, some members may not know that we have in Title I of our statutes a general, all-inclusive, all-encompassing severability statute that applies to all laws anyway, but as a matter of comfort, we sometimes put the severability clause in a specific bill. But what is the effect of a severability clause? It simply says that if a court should find one part of a statute unconstitutional, then the remaining statute may stay in effect and be enforced. So there is no way that adding a chapter or a section to this bill could harm the original bill as it stands without this amendment. The next most frequently asked question about the amendment, and indeed the bill itself, but I'm speaking to the amendment, as I saw the speaker's head rise, is this really going to put people to work today? I know one or two representatives here have said, you know, I'm not sure that this is really the answer. Well, it's not the answer. Again, it's only a partial solution. This bill, including this amendment, is prospective. It's only going to apply to the natural resource leases that are entered into from the effective date forward. It does not apply to the oil and gas leases, for example, on the North Slope right now. But had we enacted something like this many years ago, 10 years ago or so, whenever we signed the leases for the North Slope, it would be in effect now and would be there to aid the residents of Alaska who are seeking jobs up there. What we're trying to do now is just, again, get out ahead for the problems that will be coming up in the future and help people that are going to need jobs maybe 10 years from now. If you've looked at the state of Alaska leasing schedule, you'll see that we have leases scheduled later this year and again next year for oil and gas, and I don't have the coal or other mineral leasing schedules. The point being that this is a prospective, future applicability amendment. The other question I had was from a member from the Interior who was concerned that somehow this might affect gravel operations, and I know the representative from Wrangell addressed this at one point last week, I believe, and the placer miners. And we did get an opinion from the Department of Natural Resources this morning, and basically it's very clear that this amendment does not apply to placer mining activities nor gravel or rock extraction that's going to be used for gravel. And with that, Mr. Speaker, I would urge the members to field any questions and concerns they have on this issue, and I'd be pleased to try to respond.
Representative Gull.
Can we have a brief at ease, please?
The House, please stand at ease.
Will the House come back to order? Before the at ease, we had amendment number 6 before us, and it was under debate. Representative Boucher.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. One of the things that's most important to me as I stand on this floor is a respect for the system under which we operate. Today has been a trying and an emotional day. There's been push and pull on both sides on the legislation, and that is a part of the system and it's a part of the process. But I am concerned, and I just checked with the people in the press about a statement that was a release that I think places what we're doing under a cloud. And since a year and a half ago I introduced this piece of legislation, I would like to address it because it directly reflects on the members of the motivation of this body, if indeed what I have in front of me is correct. And I've asked several people in the press if that was correct, because there's always the opportunity somebody in Lalaby playing a dirty trick. But it is an unsigned statement, so... if I may, Mr. Speaker, I don't want to belabor this. I'd like to get on and reply to my good friend from Anchorage's well-presented amendment. But I'd like to, if I may, wherever I have to move special orders or what have you, and I would...
Are there any objections to the representative reading a statement? Hearing no objections, proceed.
You know, so, and I'm going to, well, I'm not going to have to try. I'm just going to read it. At 4:30 this afternoon, the House is going to take up, this is Governor Sheffield's statement, May the 9th, 1986. At 4:30 this afternoon, the House is going to take up the amendment on the local hire bill. There's a local hire bill there now that takes care of public-funded projects. This amendment extends it to natural resource projects on state lands. And I understand that people from the Senate leadership have been over on the House side and threatened House members with their capital budget, their capital projects in their district, and they've been threatening them with legislation they've been working on for the last 3 or 4 months, or even last year. So what I'd like for the press to do is your job this afternoon. Go downstairs, and when the House members go on the floor, ask those House members if they're going to vote for Jan Fakes and Vico, or if they are going to vote for the working people of Alaska. You know, I really don't quite know how to reply to it, other than I'm just going to chalk it off to emotionalism. But I feel I need to make a statement because the Senate bill that you see before you, Senate Bill 367, is an exact duplicate of House Bill 466. I'm not going to bother to go about telling you how it came about. Senator Fakes is the senator from my district. She is the co-chair of finance, and I knew it was going to need a hefty fiscal note on it, which it does have. And I asked her if she would introduce a companion bill. Now, maybe this isn't good politics, but when you've got a senator that is co-chairman of finance, I and Representative Collins and the other people in the district, we have worked together, and I thought it was natural. Now, maybe in my old age, as I told you before, I'm also getting stupid and don't understand politics. But in effect, we did get the money that was needed to do what is the most important thing in the bill. So it isn't her bill. And the only people that I've ever met in VCO is Bill Allen, and he serves on the Governor's Joint Task Force, where we are trying to get Alaskans together in a voluntary manner, which I believe is the ultimate solution to the problem. And progress is being made. Not everybody's happy with it, but some name-calling's going. So VCO has nothing to do with this bill. Senator Fakes' name is on it. I said before, when we missed the boat and their bill got over here first, it doesn't make that much difference. And I don't think that there is a single person in here that we've been working on resident hire for 2 years. This body has spent a lot of time, as was evident. The representative, my fellow from Anchorage, knew more about my legislation than I did because he worked on it with a fine-tooth comb in the chairman of finance committee. So I think we ought to move the cloud from it. Now let the politics be where they are, but I just would like to get on and reply to my good friend from Anchorage. And he is a good friend of mine. And this is his strong belief. He wants to put people to work in Alaska because really what the both of us are talking about is an Alaska job. We're not shouting at each other or calling each other names. Hey, we've gotten in the room a time or two. But I think with the combined of what through this body we have done is we have made the people of the state of Alaska aware. Downturning time that we should look out for each other. We should stop and think a bit. And I think if there was no law passed, one would have to agree that we've created a new awareness in Alaska about the fact that we're 2,000 miles away and that we do have a responsibility to each other. and that we simply can't pack up our bags and, like somebody in Iowa, Des Moines, that lost their job, they can put the family in, try and sell the house and drive over to someplace else where the construction work. You know, it's a long drive to a new opportunity for people from this state. I think that ultimately this is what we have to approve, that it is different and that there are problems that are here. I think that, and once again, my dear friend from Anchorage, he read the Attorney General's opinion, which incidentally was given to both Representative Mike Davis and myself, and what he said was correct. And but I'll read a part that I think is the part of it, you know. That's how we differed. He didn't read this one. He's talking about, first, these bills are structured in a manner that responds to the legal problems that the court has set. And really, if we get any bill through that's legal, it'll be a small miracle after what you read in the last Supreme Court decision. So if this is a little wimpy, it's because the court has said that it wants something narrowly defined, and this is about as skinny as a string of spaghetti. But what we're trying to do is establish a beachhead. If I may, Mr. Speaker, may I read from the Attorney General's letters to my good friend?
Are there any objections?
In the latter period, in his day to day, and he was talking at the earlier section that Representative from Anchorage talked about, he said, second, I believe that legal arguments in favor of local hire on public construction SB 367 are somewhat stronger than those that can be made in favor of local hire on natural resource leases. And it refers to the work that the tremendous amount of work that the senator from Anchorage has done on SB 271. And it goes on to say, this is not to suggest, however, that the courts would find the approach taken in SB 271 to be unconstitutional. Ultimately, each of these local hire approaches will have to stand on its own legal merits. As I have indicated above, I believe both are defensible. So I think that what we have tried to do, and when I say we, my friend from Anchorage also had input to this. The minority leader. I don't know who hasn't had input into what this bill that is before us now. Early on, my good friends from rural Alaska said, hey, that's fine, but how about us? You know, you're not defining our problem. So it reaches out there. There was some pro and con this morning, but I think collectively, as Alaskans, the bill that we have before us, Senate Bill 367, does what I think needs to be done. Now, hey, you know, as I said earlier, there's nothing magic about me. It's just that I strongly believe in this. This is why I'm hanging in for no amendments. Not because I have the answer, but it's what I believe will ultimately accomplish the long result. I put some paper on your desk, and at this time of the year, that's probably the last thing that you need. It was a constitution. And then there was a paper that outlined the history. And, you know, Alaska has been looking at this local hire issue through a tunnel of some 26 years. You know, it was somebody that stood on a floor someplace in this town and felt the same thing in 1960. And it became law. AS 36... 0.10.010.090, entitled Employment Preferences. And as a little outline of that legislation, it did the same thing we're trying to do today on state-funded projects. And, you know, it's not a lot of new language in it. And amazingly, that thing chugged along by itself until we went into the pipeline. That bill stood for 15 years, but nobody enforced it. But after we introduced the 72 bill, and I was here then, and there was a lot of emotions, much like right now. And, you know, it really bothers me because some of my friends that have backed me, that have knocked on doors, really think I'm off my rocker here today with this bill. They say, Red, why can't we have the other? Why can't we have it? Well, it really bothers me when my former hometown's got hundreds of people out of work. But I'm not going to tell them that passing a bill is going to put them to work. Passing a bill is a beginning. You know, and if we don't have an Alaska Hire Bill of any kind, this state is going to find a way to put its people to work, especially if we concern ourselves with it. I may be overcautious, but I think this is our last chance. If you would read the editorials, after we lost the last time, it was resident hire. In fact, here in the local papers, its time has passed. And you could see the support falling off of it. Well, it's only been in recent weeks that two of our largest cities says, hey, maybe this is the way. It's a little bit thinner bill. And it referred to the Senate bill then. It also referred to our House bill. And amazingly enough, it's probably a 1 in 1,000 shot. Representative Pinalberry's bill, 367 House bill, had the same number that this bill has, which is probably 1,000,001 shot. But basically, what is this intended to do after looking back through everything that happened? It's intended to establish a small beachhead. We have assaulted the beach with tanks, with everything, and we haven't landed. We keep getting repelled. And the court told us strongly, hey, in fact, it practically told us, forget it, because the Alaska Constitution would write anything down. We believe if we set about a bill that dealt with the human needs, not just unemployment of the people of our state, that a court would listen. It listened. It singled places out when there were burnt out cities in the rest of the United States. And we have pockets of poverty in this state that need addressing. And occasionally they shift. A few months ago, they were Fairbanks. Now the military's moving in there and the picture's improved. It's Mat Valley. So what we're trying to identify is not try and throw everything in Alaska in one slump, but to narrowly define it. Now, I know some of this stuff in here. You sit down. It took Representative from Anchorage, my friend, to explain it. You know, he has a great mind, the ability to be able to look at things line after line and understand what they do. I am just motivated by the ultimate goal that I'm trying to accomplish. So we're establishing a beachhead. I think that's what this bill will do. And I think that the hard work that Representative Pinalberry and others have done, people from the other body, that once we establish the beachhead, then what will it trigger? It will start the Department of Labor on an annual basis to look at this thing that we call resident hire, Alaska hire, local hire. It means everything to everybody. I mean, many different things to each person. And I think that the minority leader has pointed out, the state is an offender. Well, a lot of us are. We simply need to be reminded. We might get some amazing figures out of that. But as we move forward and gather the fact, Alaskans don't need laws to herd them or push them into corners. I just kind of look at this as triggering the mechanism for the governor annually to present to this body what is the state of our working force in this state. I see the day when some of the companies that we're fighting with instead of working with will stand at an annual award banquet and yes, sir.
Representative Martin,
Speaker,
state your point of order.
I hate to interfere with the eloquent presentation of the gentleman speaking, but I think we're going too far from the amendment itself. I'm willing to hear his speech because I know he's going to prepare it for the main bill. But I think we should stick to the amendment, if we may.
Speaker, I really object to interrupting a speech that's entirely in order on this amendment. That isn't a point of order.
Yeah, Representative Martin, the amendment number 6 is a very broad and lengthy amendment, and it probably calls for lengthy discussion. There are certain things that are happening on that floor, and that's like making references to representatives on the floor by name and also using the name of certain individuals in the other body. So I know we've been together for a good number of days, like months, and I guess familiarity breeds contempt, but let's try to keep with the rules there. Representative Boucher, please proceed, but stay as close as you can to Amendment 6.
Thank you. My good friend, he's also my next-door neighbor over there. He's right. I'm getting a little carried away with it. And so it's good to be reminded, and thank you, sir. And I should shorten it up. When I begin to speak, because I'm listening to it, you know, and I'm kind of doing that, I'm getting a little carried away with it. But excuse me. What I'm trying to do is establish a beathead. That's what the bill does. Now, let me tell you who's had input in it. Everybody in this room, but every step of the way, and this is the thing that kind of sets me back about the statement that's made. It was the governor's office. We didn't make a move without their staff coming in. The attorney general, it's been crafted not by a handful of people in a room, but it's been all kinds of input. There's been input from people who proposed the natural resource legislation. I don't know whether it's perfect, but it's a year and a half's work. I probably devoted 70% of my time. I think it will establish that beachhead. And I'll tell you what I just told you what it will do. I'll tell you what it won't do. It won't be a cure for the agonizing problems that some of my friends that are sitting here today are suffering as their members come to them and say, I want work. I wish I could have a bill that did that. And the people have come to me and I've said, no, it's not right. If you do it, the courts will meet the bill as it comes off the governor's desk. And we will have done something once again in the sake of political expediency. And who would be the loser? The working men and women of this state. If I've made a mistake by fighting against the amendment, it wasn't because of what the amendment did. It was because I was afraid of what it might do. I was afraid it would self-destruct and what I consider to be maybe our last hope. Can't you see a Supreme Court ruling it down and us trying to come back again? I'd be greeted with much the same statement that I was when I introduced the bill last year, which was, and by a long dear friend of mine, Boucher, resident hire, Alaska hire, went out with you, Bill Egan, and and I'm not doing this to get this damn thing passed. Button shoes. But lo and behold, the damn issues are still at the top. And I just think it can be solved. And I just hope I'm not wrong. But it's damn it. It's my best effort, and to those that think it's for political purposes and expedience, for another person, it isn't. It's what I believe in. Now, that doesn't mean I'm not wrong. I couldn't be wrong, and I hope I'm not. And excuse all this junk. I apologize to you. And it's my best shot, and thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I'm really sorry, guys and ladies, excuse me.
We understand, Representative Boucher, the amount of work that you put into this bill. Representative Gull.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to thank my colleagues and the representative who just spoke for what I think has been a tremendous effort in behalf of local hire. I'd like to make a remark or two, if I may, and if I exceed my privilege, please call me on it. Issues have been raised regarding the various pressures and one thing or another that have been put on members on this amendment. And it's quite true that in the legislature there are a variety of pressures which we all must face in seeking compromise and seeking to get our legislation through and in weighing the issues of constitutionality, trying to see how an amendment will affect the bill and so on and so forth. And I just like to say that the decisions that are made on this amendment are certainly difficult ones, and that we have all a great deal to thank our governor for in his efforts to get a local hire bill through, just as we have much to thank the previous speaker for and many other members of this body. People in the administration, our governor, people in this body who have stood up and fought for local hire against a variety of pressures. One way or another, we're going to get thorough and complete local hire legislation through this legislature, whether it be built on the framework of the bill that's before us or a more complex version that this amendment would create. But I would just like to, and I've risen because I was rather struck and impressed by the previous remarks, I just think that whatever pressures members may be under, we've got a lot to thank Representative Boucher for and our governor for the efforts that they've put forward in behalf of the working people of the state of Alaska, and I wanted to go on record with that statement. Thank you.
Representative Pignalbury.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I, too, want to hearken back to my friend from Midtown. And it occurs to me, as we had a conversation this morning, that probably he and I feel as strongly about this issue as any two people. And no matter which way the vote comes out in this body, I think the real wonderful thing is that he and I disagree very much on this issue. And I'll tell you what, I'm going to walk out of here tonight, and I know he's going to walk out of here tonight. I don't care which way the vote goes, there's going to be nothing but good feeling between that gentleman and myself. And I would hope that that is the attitude by which this body makes all of its decisions, Mr. Speaker. Yeah. Mr. Speaker, I know there's some amendments to the amendment, and we could have a lot more discussion on the amendment, but I really, in talking to everybody in the last 2 days, I think everyone pretty much knows where they want to vote in their gut. At this time, I'd like to ask the indulgence of the body to cut the debate short, and let's just go ahead and vote on the merits. Call the question.
We do have an amendment to amendment number 6. Before I ask the clerk to refer to it, Representative Clarkson.
I want to debate the amendment. You want to do the amendment to the amendment first?
I suppose that would be the proper order because Representative Taylor?
I'll withdraw that for now, and if the amendment does pass, I'll offer it as an amendment to the bill. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Okay, since the amendment to the amendment has not been moved and is not in possession of the body, we will not refer to it. We're still on amendment number 6. Representative Martin.
Mr. Speaker, at this moment,
I'd like to ask for a point of personal privilege. I have the floor for a point of personal privilege.
Are there any objections to the request for personal privilege, of which, of course, must be personal to the representative?
Yes,
Representative
you.
Martin.
Mr. Speaker, it's not only personal to me, but I think it's personal to everyone in here. And I thank the Representative Boucher, who's a true scout of America and Alaska, for his presentation. But at the same time, I'm very much offended. I don't know how he got this particular memo, supposedly from the governor's office, that infringes upon the character of every member on this floor. To think that somehow ever, that it says here the senator leaderships have been coming over to the House side and thanking House members with capital budget or operating budget. I don't even recall seeing a senator over here this morning. I just think that, sir, if the governor has a message to send to us, he has his own stationery. He has good secretaries, and they can at least do it in the proper grammar. The third sentence is very poor English. And I think his English is better than that. And I very much question, sir, who wrote this and in whose name it was written. And I would like to ask you, Mr. Speaker, if on behalf of the House, if you would get clear from the governor, if he wrote this statement, why not put it through the channels that legal messages from the governor should come to us? And why is he infringing on the character of this members of the body that we would yield to the Senate on anything because of whatever threats he or anyone else supposes? Mr. Speaker, I really think that this letter, this memo, infringes upon the character of all members, plus myself, and I ask you to investigate and ask why it was not formally given to us. Thank you.
Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I can explain this. I happened to view the videotape. It was a press conference this afternoon where the governor spoke extemporaneously, and then this was taken down as a precise transcript of his oral statement. That's why it's provided in this form, and I don't think there's anything improper about it at all, Mr. Speaker. with regard to the amendment, a previous speaker here, in speaking against the amendment, read the governor's statement and then said, quote, this statement places what we're doing under a cloud. Well, Mr. Speaker, I think what places what we're doing under a cloud is the virtually unprecedented invasion of the House of Representatives by members of the other body, carrying fistfuls of money and threats of killing bills and eliminating projects from the capital budget. Mr. Speaker, in my memory, I've never seen such an interference with the deliberations of one body by the other body, and I think it's entirely inappropriate. Secondly, Mr. Speaker, one of the prior speakers who spoke against the amendment talked about, quote, establishing a small beachhead. He asked us to be patient. Well, Mr. Speaker, I suggest to him that he tell that to the workers of Alaska who are unemployed. I don't think they're very patient. I don't think they want to establish a small beachhead. I think they want to strike hard, they want to do what's right, and they want us to do it right now. No small beachheads, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I conducted a poll in my district this last summer, just a general poll to see how people were feeling about things, and I asked them about a number of issues and then left a general comment section. Mr. Speaker, the response to that poll was overwhelming, and throughout the state, any poll that I have seen in the state of Alaska indicates that the people in Alaska overwhelmingly support a strong local hire bill. And that includes, Mr. Speaker, not only a local hire bill that applies to state construction, but a bill that, like this amendment, would apply to state land and state-owned oil when we've hired somebody to take that oil out of the ground for us. And that's what this amendment is all about, Mr. Speaker. And I think the people of Alaska want to see that. Mr. Speaker, there's a lot of different reasons to vote for amendments. And I just ask the members of this body not to vote on this amendment based on who you like better, the proponents or the opponents of the amendment. Mr. Speaker, I ask you not to vote on this amendment because a capital project has been threatened or your favorite bill has been threatened. Obviously, I ask you not to vote on this amendment because of campaign contributions or because of blatant interference by the members of the other body with the deliberations of this body. I simply ask, Mr. Speaker, that the members of this body vote on the merits of the amendment. Vote on what will make you feel good when you wake up tomorrow morning. And vote for what the people of Alaska want. And they want local hire like this amendment.
Representative Martin, you have asked for a personal privilege. Do we have any member that objects to that? Hearing no objections, Representative Martin, personal
privilege. Speaker, the gentleman didn't like me before interfering. I'm sorry I did interfere with my good friend Red, but I didn't want to interfere with him. He, too, had made allegations, and I think we ought to come out in the opening. I personally don't know what was going on back and forth, but it seems like the governor and the majority leader knows that there's been some major threats going on. And I'd like to ask any member in this House who has received any threats from any member of the other House to please let us know now on what capital budget, on what bills. And let us have it in the opening. And then, Mr. Speaker, I think as a group, we can go to the Senate and let them know how we feel about their kind of tactics. But the allegations are being made, and I think now we should say exactly what, because we have a jury going right here in front of God and everyone else, and these that kind of allegations should not just be left standing.
Representative Clarkson.
I realize the minority leader's only been in this body for 6 or 8 years, but he ought to know by now that neither of those were matters of personal privilege. If he wants to debate the amendment or discuss the statement that was sent down here, then he can do that. But he cannot do it under personal privilege.
Yeah, personal privilege, as I tried to indicate before the first time the minority leader sought that particular motion, was something that affects that representative personally in his functioning in this body. If
the representative did have a given threat which affected your function, then it would be appropriate. But the majority leader is correct, but the chair did not want to interfere. But Representative Schultz.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. On the amendment, I would just like to ask the body. I've watched the majority leader stand up, the minority leader stand up, other people stand up. I would like to hear what people have to think about amendment number 6. I have yet to hear anyone tell me one way or the other how they feel about amendment number 6. They praise Alaskan hire, everything else. Everyone in this body does. Everyone will push the button 40-zip for Alaskan hire. We know that. I would like to know about amendment number 6. I'd like to know how the people feel about it. You stand up and talk and talk and talk and talk, and it gets just a little bit old hearing things about Alaskan hire, which we all support. Would you please address the amendment? If you got problems with it, explain why.
Okay, from the chair here, the debate has been straying. I indicated before that the amendment number 6 indeed is lengthy and lends itself to many facets of debate on local hire. And I heard several members say that they would like to make a short statement and then get on with the vote. It'd be very nice if we could do that. Do we have any further debate on amendment number 6? Representative Rieger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would just encourage the members to look at section 127 of Masons and judge for themselves whether some of the statements about the other house are in order.
As the chair has indicated before, that there has been the use of reference to members of the other body by name. It's even gotten to the point where members of this body are calling people by their nicknames. I realize this issue is important to all of us and that many of you spent long, long hours on it, but let's try to stick with amendment number 6, give the benefit of the rest of the members of this body your feelings on it, and let's do what we were sent here for. Representative Maru.
Mr. Speaker, I am delighted to respond to the invitation of my colleague from Chicken with regard to perhaps trying to inject an element of rationality in the increasingly emotional debate that we've heard, which is heating up. I am a co-sponsor of this bill, or to be more precise, of course, I am a co-sponsor of House Bill 466, which started out identically to Senate Bill 367. I am also a co-sponsor of House Bill 294, which had the same prime sponsor last year and was passed into law as Chapter 69, Session Laws of Alaska 1985. I think you can tell from those two facts that I certainly favor Alaska hire. The original House Bill 466 is 5.5 pages long. I signed on to it because I thought it did a good job. The only question I had was the fact that it went a little astray, in my opinion, in getting into disadvantaged minorities. But I didn't find that too offensive because it doesn't really get into a description of minorities. It doesn't get into a lot of detail. It says we should hire minorities, and that's fine with me. I have hired minorities every chance I had. Then we get into the current version of SB 367, which is 10 pages long. Now, that's doubling the size of the bill. Not only that, but it gets into specifics on minorities, spells them out, as a previous speaker mentioned, Hispanics, Asians, Pacific Islanders, American Indians, Alaskan Natives, and blacks. Now, those are certainly minorities. However, that's not all of the minorities. Those are only the government-approved minorities. I say that because I'm a member of a number of different minorities, one of which is an American of French descent. Now, French Americans are a small minority. I realize we have 3 or 4 in this house, but nonetheless, we're a small minority, including the prime sponsor of the companion legislation, HB 466. And the reason I object to that somewhat is I think it's muddying the water, it's leading us astray, and is going to get us into more constitutional battles than we care to get into. As I mentioned, French Americans are not mentioned. I once applied for a loan, for a minority loan from SBA, and I was told I couldn't have it. In spite of the fact that I'm a member of one of the smallest ethnic groups in America, I could not have it because, quote, French Americans always succeed, unquote. Now, that's not true. don't know whether you call me a success. That's beside the point, but nonetheless, I have relatives in Texas who are Stell dirt farmers, and they probably consider themselves considerable successes because they don't have to put up with some of the stuff I have to put up with. But in any case, I resent someone saying that you can't have a loan because your particular ethnic group is always successful. That's ridiculous, and no ethnic group is always successful. I am the third generation in this country. I'm only the second generation born in this country. And why should we have 6 particular ethnic groups, minorities, which are government-approved, and the rest of us are not government-approved? Well, I don't want to get too far in that, but I do want to point out that that is in the Senate bill. Another thing that's in the Senate bill, which is going to be made worse by this amendment, is the fact that it gets into female hiring. Well, now, if we want to hire Alaskans, we should hire Alaskans of all shapes, sexes, sizes, races, religions, colors, you name it.
Representative Pinyalberry, state your point of order, please.
Speaker, as much as I'm enjoying this, I'd like the debate pursuant to the representative from Chicken to stick to the amendment. This, he's talking about the bill. We're on amendment number 6.
Yeah, Mr. Representative Maru, you have strayed here, and
Mr. Speaker, I'm trying to tie it together, and the previous speaker has already spoken 3 times on the amendment. This is my first chance.
Well, Representative Maru, there, Representative Pinyalberry, of course, is the prime sponsor of this amendment, and questions have come his way of which the chair has allowed him to answer it. But would the representative please proceed in order, addressing your remarks basically to amendments, and please tie it up as quick as you can there to that amendment.
The original bill is 5.5 pages long. The bill before us is 10 pages long. The amendment would double that again to 20 pages long. Not only that, but the amendment gets into the matter of state-owned lands and everything that happens in state-owned lands. The original bill has to do with only public money and public projects. We should take care of our own house first. The amendment gets into private projects on state-owned land. Not only that, it has to do not only with oil and gas projects, but also with timber projects. We're going to, every place there's state land and there's going to be a project on it, no matter who builds it, no matter where the money comes from, the amendment would require that people abide by this amendment and abide by this law. This, in my opinion, is straying far, far afield. I think that the original bill should have been kept the way it was. The Senate bill goes a little bit too far, and I think is really bumping against constitutionalities. The amendment is really going overboard. The amendment carries it far beyond where it is going to be supportable in court. I don't know if you're aware, but on this particular amendment, there has been a letter sent to the governor from an oil company, which was stated by the maker of this amendment this morning as being one of the two companies in Alaska who are most in favor of Alaskan hire, and that is Standard Alaska Production, otherwise or formerly known as Sohio Alaska. There is a letter addressed to the governor, hand-delivered today. You may have a copy of it yourselves, from the president of Standard Alaska, George Nelson. In it, he says that they are unable to support the amendment, but they can and they will support the original Boucher Public Works Public Funds bill. The amendment, in my opinion, does remove from the oil industry a large portion of their inherent management rights, which ultimately will far outweigh the provisions of the amendment. You may be aware of a Department of Labor report, 1984, entitled Non-Residents Working in Alaska. Why aren't those particular industries with the highest non-Alaska hire in this amendment? Food processing, 65%, construction, 32%, fishing, 35%. These are non-Alaskans. Furniture manufacture, 33%, eating and drinking places, 30%. The oil industry has a much higher rate of resident employment. The amendment having to do, the part of the amendment having to do with incorporation into contracts would again hamper management rights. This would put into this provision is not put into any other state contracts or mandated for any other industry doing business in the state. The provision on reporting provisions would result in higher administrative costs and complexities for both the state and the oil and gas industry. I think it's been established that the oil industry does have the highest percentage of resident employment, and ultimately the amendment can and probably will result in an endless series of litigation filed against the state by not only the natural resource industries, but by 1, non-resident qualified worker, 2, Alaskan residents who feel they're qualified for work but are judged otherwise, 3, contractors or subcontractors who feel that the provisions would make them non-competitive, and lastly, could result in actually reduced development on state lands. Now, we need an Alaska Hire bill. We have an Alaska Hire bill that's already been doubled in size. We should not double it further. If we do, we jeopardize the entire Alaska Hire bill. We know this from previous legislatures who have tried it. There was a bill, there was a law thrown out earlier this year by the Supreme Court, as I'm sure you're aware. We cannot solve all of society's problems in one bill. We know. We've tried it several times. It just doesn't work. You can't solve all of the problems that you want to solve. If you want to go for Alaska Hire, let's go for Alaska Hire. That is in the original bill, and to a diluted extent, it's in the Senate bill. If we add the amendment to it, it is going to dilute it so far and take it so far afield, muddy the water so far, that we're going to jeopardize the entire Alaska Hire, and I have no doubt that it would be thrown out by the courts in short order. I speak against the amendment simply because I am in favor of Alaska Hire. To be in favor of Alaska Hire, I feel we should keep the Senate bill. We should not amend it so far that it, frankly, is going to generate a lot of lawsuits and get thrown out by the courts.
Any further debate on Amendment Number 6? Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm going to try to break the tradition here with the prior speakers and keep my remarks rather short. But first of all, I'd like to answer some of the perhaps questions that have been brought up in the past about the fact that if this amendment passes, that somehow the whole bill is going to go down in flames. There is a severability clause in this legislation, and if any part of it is ruled unconstitutional, then the other parts remain. So I don't believe that's an issue that we're addressing today. I think the issue that we're addressing here today is local hire, and it's how we're going to address this local hire. And I think when we all came down here 2 years ago, we had a lot of information, or we didn't have a lot of information on the amount of non-residents working in our state. And we worked the first session of this legislature identifying that kinds of information, and we got that from the Department of Labor. And I think you all received this book here. And in 1984, $677 million was paid to 71,000 non-resident workers. So the issue, there is an issue of a non-resident workforce here, and I think it's up to us to try to address that. I can't really count the number of people that I've talked to in my district. Can't count the number of people that I talk to down here and also in my trip up north. But they all want us to address this issue. They don't want us to establish a beachhead. They don't want us to address only part of the issue. They want us to look at the whole picture. And I think we have the opportunity here this afternoon to do just that. The people of this state deserve it. I urge we adopt the amendment.
Representative Kopanen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Short statement on the amendment number 6. ARCO, in the last 3 weeks, has laid off 60 long-term Alaskan employees on the North Slope, replaced them largely with out-of-state employees. I'm for amendment number 6.
Representative Ewling.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think basically we have to look at this issue very much on the merits of what's before us. I realize certainly the last 2 days have been very trying for a number of members here, and I think that, as the other members of this body know, I try to look at everything on the merits of it, if I have to, line by line and precept by precept. I have a couple questions, but before I go into those questions, I'd like to thank very much the sponsor of this bill, who I know has worked very, very hard to come up with a very good compromise position. And I know we've had numerous meetings in the morning and trying to work some of these problems out, and I just want to appreciate it, and I thought his speech was very heartwarming, and I think he's really worked hard on this issue. And I think we all have to look at it from the standpoint of coming up with a comprehensive local hire bill. And sometimes you have to start small, and you have to go from that point forward. You can't have everything now and just the way it has to be, and it can't be rammed down our throats. So I think we have to look very carefully at this. I'd like to ask the sponsor of the amendment a couple questions. One of those is, what other states, specifically on page 6, what other states have had local hire regulations where they have controlled natural resources land? And also, it was my understanding that the original bill that was in this body had to do with future leases. And as I read this, I understand this would encompass all leases presently under under state jurisdiction presently. So I think we have to look very, very carefully at what the far-reaching potential of this bill may or may not be. And I do have specific questions, and maybe the member, the sponsor of this amendment, would answer them.
Representative Pignelberry.
Mr. Speaker, I'll try to answer, and I'll only be able to give a partial answer. First, with regard to the other states, the only other state that I know of that has a law that's withstood constitutional scrutiny, of course, is Wyoming. And unless you can give me a line and page number on the Constitution, the future applicability versus the retroactive, it does not apply to. It is not retroactive and does not apply to existing contracts. That's the intent. That's the way it's drafted. I have to go a step further and say, Mr. Speaker, for those members who are on record with me as opposing this amendment, I don't know why we've got to grandstand and waste each other's time here asking questions that we're not going to be able to affect the vote anyway. Let's just go ahead and get on with the vote on the merits.
Mr. Speaker, I'm trying.
Representative Ewing.
Thank you. I will try to be easy with the member, as I always am, trying to be calm and collective during these important times. I don't think we want to grandstand anything. I don't think I'm a grandstander. I think I get to the point pretty quickly on some of these issues. The specific section I'm speaking of to the representative from East Anchorage is on page 6, section 3845090 on incorporation into contracts. We're not only talking about contracts here, we're talking about subcontracts and sub-subcontracts. I want to know what the ramifications are on all the businesses that are doing business on the state lands presently, and I want to know exactly what's going to happen, if that's just going to be on future contracts or it's going to be on present situation, and I want to know how that reads, and I want to understand it.
Representative Hurley, you've been seeking the floor.
Mr. Speaker, I support this amendment. I come from an area of the state that has the highest unemployment rate at the present time. The resources, according to our Constitution, belong to all of the people of Alaska. Some of you may not know, but I was here in this very building back in the early 40s when this legislature was controlled by the Seattle business community interests, including canned salmon and the Alaska Steamship Company. The same kind of absentee employment was taking place. Packers brought their own cannery workers in from outside, kept them at remote cannery sites, returned them by ship to Seattle or San Francisco and paid them off there. One need only go to the airport in Anchorage or Fairbanks and note the same labor traffic today, changing planes to reach the North Slope from Oklahoma and Texas and other places. The underlying issue which will knock down is whether the absentees continue to take our jobs, continue to take jobs from Alaskans working on jobs generated by the resources that belong to all the people of Alaska. And I wish to align myself with the remarks of the majority speaker. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Cotton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just in regard to a question that was asked, I thought it was answered, but it got asked again, so maybe I'll try to answer it. 3845090 talks about incorporation into contracts. I think it's very clear that the words in that section say that the commissioner should